These cities may change, but there always remains my obsession. Through silken waters my gondola plies, and the bridge it sighs.
There is no God who can teach us anything new. Only unveil for us what we already knew, but had somehow forgotten down the canals of time. We shall meet again in a place without winter. You will wear a pink carnation. I will wear almost nothing but a halo of the golden southern sun. Only then can you find relief. Only then shall you be released.
Serenissima! Serenissima!
Death in Venice by Thomas Mann, dramatized for radio by Peter Wolfe, starring Clive Francis as Gustav von Aschenbach, with Penny Darney and John Rowe. Death in Venice.
Wake up, Gustav. Splash water, ice cold in your face. Sit down. Now try again, for humanity's sake, begin again. To work, my soul, to war. Chapter one. He was bleeding from many wounds. On cold grey stone, the red blood lay like rose petals. No, too light. Chapter one. He was bleeding from 100 wounds. Though his chin was high and raised to heaven, showing a face of virginal manliness that stood in proud defiance, even as the spears and arrows pierced his body, he... Still too limp. Chapter one. He was smiling as the shafts penetrated his flesh, ripping 1,000 gaping orifices, which as they spurted fluid became dark crimson tunnels and secret passages through which his violators could only gaze in awe. Red blood burst from him in passion and sweet, sweet pain. Oh, Gustav Eugenius, Wagner, be proud of you. Haunting, yes. Sublime, yes. Just the right touch of glory on the verge of doom. No. No, can't write that. Dead, too revealing. I may be writing about Saint Sebastian, but in truth, this is the story of my life! Ah! Torn, tortured shreds. Ah! Can there be suffering loftier than mine, such as the power of the martyr, humbling everyone with his moral beauty and romantic perfection, even at the moment it's destroyed?
Sir? You're quite out, sir.
Never!
You made such a row.
I suffer in silence! Do you contradict me? In his own house, accuse your master of losing control of his own mind.
Ava, I'll deal with this. Go help cook.
Mrs. Bloom, remind your staff that the last thing I need is to have my concentration murdered.
Paper everywhere. In the fireplace.
Yes, yes, yes. The pen writes, paper turns white to black with words, and all of them drivel.
I understand. Watched you struggle for months, sir. You're a perfectionist.
And perfection is doomed to failure. I mean, here I am, the toast of Bavaria, ennobled by the king, no less. By God, I'm even studied at school, and yet the opening sentence of my new book, The Life and Death of Martyrs, eagerly awaited by everyone, is quite beyond me. They call it writer's block. I call it the plague of genius. Mrs. Blair, I'm going for a walk in the park. When I return, I expect all this rubbish to be gone, obliterated. Not even the smell must remain. It must quite simply cease to exist. Do I make myself clear?
Perfectly.
There! Perfection! Hot from the martyr's mouth. So why can I not achieve this in writing? Lord, am I such a bad man? No, surely, no. Just weak and confused.
Though never before revealed out loud, such inner torment is nothing new to Gustav. His life is his work, and his work lays bare the schism that lurks within his own blood. His father was Silesian, of military stock, conformist, dogmatic, austere. His mother, the daughter of a musician from Bohemia, a hot brew of impulse and sensuality. There was always pressure on him to achieve. And how typical of Gustav that when he did achieve, and yes, he did achieve to perfection, like any masochist, he gained little pleasure from it. For perfection in all things is a duty, not a caprice. He had no idle youth. His parents' union has borne in their son the most dangerous conflict. Gustav von Eschenbach is the collision of fire and ice.
Good afternoon! So glad to see you out and about again!
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, my Harold. I mean, look at me. 50, graying, stooped, and these lines that slash my forehead might as well be scars, victim to my endless war of words. The secret of my success? Sacrifice, pure and cruel. Genius can only reside where inspiration is bound and chained to self-discipline and hard labor. While all Munich wafts about the park without a care, I fear I've lost my very best years to it, and I can no longer enjoying myself.
Good day, sir.
Oh, sir.
Who was that?
His name escapes me, but he's famous, I'm sure of that.
Ignore them, Gustav. They don't count. Focus on your real problem. You were born unlucky. Any talent you possess comes not from some easy, gushing tidal wave of creativity, but from a myriad tiny, painful details, decisions. Your work's not scrawled down drunk like some message to a serpent. It's built. Brick by brick, like a huge white city. A tapestry, if you will. One stitch means nothing, only from a distance. Can others stand back and admire the grand design?
Mr. von Eschenbach, an honor to bump into you.
Not today, thank you.
Oh, I'd just like to say, sir, on behalf of all Munich, thank you. I've admired your talent for years, sir. Ah, your exhaustive and definitive masterpiece on Frederick the Great. And who can forget those shorter modern classics, Art and Intellect and A Study in Dejection?
Abjection. A study in abjection is misery on an operatic scale. A study in dejection would be misery made merely mundane.
And I must own up to a particular fondness for your earlier, lighter work, particularly that which dates from before your wife's death. Oh, forgive me. Could I prevail upon you to sign this book? Yes, I regret it's one of Schiller's. But don't critics speak of you in the same breath?
When I fell ill in Vienna, a critic remarked, Eschenbach is forever like this. The critic clenched his fist tight and never like this. He then let it relax into a limp wrist. And everyone laughed. And though outwardly I grinned along, inwardly I wept. I promise you they're not laughing anymore.
Quite. Thank you. I shall treasure this book.
So?
Beg pardon?
Read it, then.
What?
What I signed in Schiller's book.
Art is agony. Angst is ecstasy. Struggle is holy. No rest for the worthy. We can sleep when we're history. Gustav von Aschenbach shall never descend to a limp wrist. Mm,
how's that for a study in objection? And you know, it keeps getting harder, my battle against the void, my triumph of harsh ideas over weak flesh. And as you may have noted, they are not broad, the shoulders which shoulder this load.
Quite.
Yeah, now, do you see, once this awesome truth has dawned, there can be no respite, for unless a writer can enslave his emotions, police his feminine traits, he is nothing, utterly nothing, but limp wrists and hot air.
Quite. Well, good luck, sir, and may you find peace somehow, somewhere.
Idiot, humouring me. Doesn't he know that that was the best speech I've written in months? And now I'm up and raging with coal fire.
What did I say about the collision of fire and ice? Gustav's dilemma is that he's all drive when there's nothing left to drive, mistaking... Oh, how would the great man put it if he dared? Mistaking paranoia for passion, denial for dignity, ignorance for innocence, and masturbation for mastery. Yes, like all of us, Gustav's best years are behind him. He could, if only he could, if only he'd accept this. Turn tail here and now, go back to his 12 rooms and 5 staff in Prince Rupert Street, and there, as the sun sinks behind the meadow beyond the park, accept a slow, graceful decline into posterity. But such easy one respect is not Gustav's style. He is a champion of all those who, in order to create, must push themselves to the brink of exhaustion. So, on this fateful evening of 1911, when for a few hours cool May turns to sultry August, this ravaged, battered man so full of past glory sets his face against the setting sun and marches forward into destiny. As he reaches the Föhring Highway, nothing stirs.
That's unusual. What a soul or a vehicle to be seen.
Opposite the northern cemetery, he grows suddenly weary and waits for a tram to bear him home, occupying himself the while with holy script etched in gold upon the walls of the Byzantine mortuary chapel.
For they shall enter the mansion of the Lord. A touch optimistic, perhaps, knowing as I do the sinners of Munich. May light eternal radiate upon them. Better. Quite poignant, indeed, it would seem. Even in death, there are only 3 states of existence: comedy, tragedy, and mystery. Oh, over there, from the steps of the chapel, someone watching me. Tall, gaunt. There's something non-Bavarian about this stranger, something wild, which speaks of far-flung lands, exotic climes. Whether by dazzlement or deformity, his lips draw back tight to the gums, bearing long white teeth reflecting the sinking sun. This strange expression the stranger's face wears, is it a grin or a grimace? And in my head he speaks without moving his lips.
I will show you new inspiration, Gustav. I will take you back to where it all began. I will bring you something to believe in, Gustav. I will row you across the swamp to the promised land.
What's happening? A seizure? A vision? Control, Gustav. Keep control. Curb your fear with self-discipline. What's happening to me? I don't understand. Describe it. Control it. Up to my knees and mat. Describe it. Report. This is your sworn duty. As a writer, define, contain, bring order.
Beneath a reeking sky, Munich melts in the heat. A tropical swampland rises to replace her. Furring highway slides into green, stagnant pools which lap at my thighs. Primeval, up between the cemetery tombstones thrust fern and palm, vegetation rank and fleshy.
And close, too close. In a nearby bamboo thicket, I find myself gazing, not at the face of the foreigner. No, he's long gone. I stare into the eyes of a crouching tiger.
Ah! sir? No,
thank you. I'm quite all right.
Then hop on. Sure you're all right, sir?
Yes.
You look as though you need to sit down.
Give me a one-way ticket home to Prince Rupert Street and hurry.
Mrs. Blum, thank heaven you're back.
Why, the chaos. What on earth?
His master, he's gone mad. Oh,
not again.
Oh, this time worse. He's gone all happy. He keeps smiling. It's horrible. He's making us pack everything and leave for the summer. Me and you are to make his mountain chalet ready for him in 4 weeks' time.
What brought this on?
Oh, Cook will tell you. Tell her, Cook.
On the telephone he was to one of his bouncy friends. I've had a mysterious vision, says he. You know, the way he does. What has awoken me? A youthful craving. His very words, Mrs. Blum. A youthful craving to travel far from the cold, ordered world I call home.
Oh, everyone, please be careful.
I've had a damson conversion, says he.
A what?
Oh, he means a damascene conversion. It's biblical. On the road to Damascus.
Never mind that. Where is he now?
Gone.
To where?
Oh, ask Cook. He had everything.
Oh. I take the overnight train to Trieste, he says, and from there to the Adriatic coast, wherever that be, where I shall repair to a small resort island of repute.
And here's the really mad bit, Mrs. Blum. Tell her, Cook.
My destination, says he, clenching his fists like a constipated boxer. My goal is a tropical paradise, perhaps not as far away as where tigers roam free, but I intend to lose myself in the languid south. Aschenbach must return to innocence. I need to refind my warmth.
Where does one roam to melt a cold heart? Naples? Crete? One south of the Alps, my drive ebbed. On the Adriatic, my wanderlust floundered on the shores of indecision. Until I found a name I'd almost forgot. Serenissima. Rediscovered when I fingered idly through an antique shipping chart. Oh, dolce, far niente. Realm of the fabled. Staring me right in the face. I mean, how could I have been so blind? Where else could a cold soul sail? Beirut, Cairo? Thank you, Lord, for guiding me safe to harbor. God knows I'm not a bad man, just dazed and bewildered.
We're here, my love, sailing right into her.
Such a view. Isn't it romantic?
Perfect place for our honeymoon.
Yes, in love. In Venice. In a place beyond words.
Oh, no, madam. There are always words. I believe language to be verbal architecture. With it, a writer such as I can build, word on word, brick by brick, exactly what he sees, however sublime. And what I see, madam, looming from the mist is precisely what renders lesser souls speechless. I mean, Serenissima, the most incomparable city on earth. A civilization built on nothing but water, southerly wind, and eastern promise. So permanent, yet so fragile. Oh, ever stinking city, old as a duchess, yet painted like a tart. She takes such pride in her image when underneath all is mud. Let us salute the perfect mating of beauty with decay.
Well, quite an introduction, my love. The gondolas are ready to take us ashore.
Oh, Misterioso. Oh, I feel the return of my long-lost passion. Luminoso. Oh, the words pour out as if I'm a writer unblocked. Oh, ever sinking city, forever teetering on the brink of demise. Much like myself. Your founders built an empire from a swamp. Ambition made stone as vast as the pyramids. Such is the power of culture over death, eh? In this achievement, your bricks and my books are identical. Serenissima, be my inspiration, my refuge from the norm.
and your skirts let me hide from humdrum mundanity. Let me slide down your alleys, up your canals, enter you by your secret tunnels and back passages.
Je suis doué pour nous, il n'y a rien.
Who is this absurd young fop?
Bonjour, votre excellence.
Close up, he's old. Hair, black with dye. Painted moustache, false grinning teeth, a parody of beauty.
Comment allez-vous?
Get out of my view. This perfect moment ruined because of you.
Scusa, signore. Your trunk is packed, the gondola is ready. Please take care walking down these steps here. And enjoy your stay in a charming city.
Oui, oui. Charmant. Au revoir, votre excellence. A charming stay we wish you. I kiss my fingers. Deux. Are you un ou deux, monsieur? Give her our love, your pretty little thing, your sweetie, sweetie, sweetheart. Remember us. These cities may change, but there always remains my obsession.
How apt I escaped this old young decadent who resembles nothing so much as a rouged and powdered corpse. In a gondola which resembles nothing so much as a black painted coffin. Rowed by a gondolier who resembles nothing so much as the foreign stranger I beheld back home on the steps of a Munich mortuary chapel. At last, my chance to lie back and take in her full vista. Approach Venice as she should be approached, from a gondola. Ah, look, the ducal mansion. The Bridge of Sighs, the lion and the saint perched on columns at water's edge, the extraordinary jutting side wing of the fabulous basilica, the giant's clock, the gate tower. But wait, the giant's clock is shrinking. We're drifting out to sea. Gondolier! To the Vaporetto! I said, to the Vaporetto!
You are going to the Lido.
I only engaged this gondola to row me across to San Marco. From there, I wish to take the Vaporetto to the Lido. Row me across to San Marco!
You cannot take the Vaporetto, signor.
Why ever not?
Because the Vaporetto does not carry luggage.
Well, that is my affair. I may wish to deposit my luggage. Would you kindly turn round? What is your charge for this trip?
This signore will pay.
Pay? I will pay nothing, absolutely nothing, if you don't take me where I want to go.
Oh, yes. I row you well. The signore will pay.
What can he mean? Is his aim to kidnap me? Or worse, one quick thwack of his oar and I'm sent bubbling to Hades. With my already limp wrist idly dangling in the thick black water of this Italian river's Styx, I must own up to feeling a certain thrill at my loss of control. Could it be that I, so obsessed with repression, domination of the senses, with bringing moral order to the world, am on the verge of surrender to darker forces? Urges more forbidden than corrupting? If this be true, my holiday from myself has already begun.
Soon the gondolier keeps his word, deposits his passenger without ceremony at the Lido landing station. Fully intending to pay his ferryman, Gustav goes in search of small change, but upon his return to the landing, both gondola and gondolier are vanished.
Bagardoff! He's a bad one, that one evil. Rose without permission. Saw the police coming and disappeared quick. The signori has had a free trip.
Whether or not this be true, only now, after a taxing and ominous voyage, can Gustav von Aschenbach earn the right to enter Serenissima, the city of his dreams. If only the journey could end here, with Gustav significantly mellowed from the man of rules, laws, and dictates. A man with his edges softened, yet still adequately defined. But life isn't like that, nor is ice. Ice must remain ice, or it will dissolve into water. So, let's leave him now at peace for once to grab what rest he can before tomorrow comes. And with it, the darkest dawn of them all.
Mrs. Blum, can it be morning already?
Oh, I forgot. I'm south of all that.
Entrare.
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. von Aschenbach. And our honor, a man of your renown, to have at our Excelsior Hotel. Thank you. I am a great admirer of your writing, particularly your earlier, lighter work. A room your satisfaction meets, I trust. A fine view of the beach, no? The most proud we are of the cherrywood bed, crafted here in Venezia. Thank you. Dinner is served. Thank you.
Sad snob. Desperate to flaunt his grasp of German language, he murders the grammar. So, dinner time. The salt air brings thirst and hunger. Ugh, lukewarm. Such a degenerate race, they can't even chill the water. Poor Italy, cradle of the Renaissance. Sometimes you resemble a ship of fools.
May I present our agneau du jour? Compliments of the chef.
Fine. Well, hardly. This meat's tough. Mutton dressed as lamb. But forget the food. Relish the company. Away from bothersome locals, dinner-jacketed me can lounge with dinner-jacketed brethren. A clientele par excellence gabbling the planet's major languages. North is German, Russian aristocracy to the east. West, we have the French, the American. And away on the dining room's far side, is that Polish, I hear? Waiter!
Sir.
I ordered loin of lamb, rare. You give me rump, tough and burnt to blazes. I have the digestion of an invalid. Bring me some tender meat. Now let me see. If this were a novel, and I, a novelist free from the curse of writer's block, how would I describe them? Our captive Poles. Two sisters, mid to late teens, all plain and formal, complete with nurse to keep an eye on their chastity. They're no fear of losing that. By contrast, they have a mother most noble, who by the look of her rules with a handbag of iron. Though I'd wager she spoils her only son. What is he, 14? His back may be turned, but even from here I perceive a marked contrast.
Wine, sir?
The casual robe of limb. The white sailor suit. Blonde ringlets dancing about his shoulders. Though I'm sure taking him from behind remains the best view. Now he's coming full frontal. I bet he betrays the same dourness as his ugly sisters. With such siblings, he'll possess the face of a Polish ox. Oh, just a little more to the left, Adonis, unveil thyself. Part those golden curls and...
Here, sir, your meat. Especially prepared for you alone, young and tender. This loin he would melt in your mouth. Enjoy.
Cool down, Gustav. Watch your table manners. But the meat, you're in public, contain yourself. But this loin, the meat is irrelevant. The youth is your passion. But why? What's happening? Control yourself. Bring order. I can't. You must. You must define your feelings. You must find words to make them say. But how to describe what I don't understand? There are no words. I'm a writer, lost for words. Nonsense. Nonsense. You could say there's a lean young fellow, too frail for boxing. That'd wreck his looks, but I'd gladly run him round the park a couple of laps. Or you could say such high cheekbones, what fine contour of the lip.
I shall write a masterpiece called David Slays Goliath, and he shall be my boy hero. Or you could say he is the son I never had, recalling my own lost youth. The spring awakening cuts to the bone. In the winter of my years, I gaze on this youth, and I'm all desolation. And I'm wrong. There is a word which by its very utterance blows away language, literature, even reason itself. All the monuments men erect to flatter their own dull brains crash like so much rubble to reveal the truth, naked and howling, of how things really are. And how they are is... Oh, look at him. What the boy is.
And how is your meat, sir?
Beautiful.
Gus, I'm sorry. I had to wake you. You were thrashing about in the grass, snoring like a man drowning.
Then it was all a dream.
What was?
I really don't remember.
Tell me, is this meadow a dream?
No.
And this summer's day?
No.
And me, Gus? Am I a dream?
No. Oh, I wish today could last forever.
Mm. There's no need. Every day can be like this. We'll have years and years of this.
I never knew life could be so beautiful.
And it's only just beginning.
Father! Father, I wrote you a song. It's called Alpine Symphony.
But where are the words?
It's very hard to play. Mother will sing.
No, this is your doing, too.
Yes, Astrid and I are a conspiracy. In heaven, there are only stars above. Everything is warmth and love. In heaven.
Need you. But you're gone.
Yes, Gustav. And you're alone.
Astrid, Irina, why did you leave me?
Your wife went the way of all flesh, and as soon as old enough, your daughter upped and married. How our loved ones fly away.
If only I could stop time, prize apart the ugly years, forever hold the moment when life was...
Beautiful?
Beautiful, yes. In all these years, that is the word I was missing.
Gustav, isn't this the very reason you journeyed south? To retrieve lost feelings, emotions, to find again a brief ray of light in our dark and empty sky.
Dawn. Already. So be it. No more tossing and turning. The beautiful still exists. He is alive and well in Venice. City boy and man, we make a holy threesome, eh? Here is the inspiration I have been lacking. And now he's found. By heaven, I must write.
Giuliette, lampone, flaggole, pesche, angurie. Ciliegie, lamponi,
flamme... Taggio, out of the water and dry off. You know your mother wants to go sightseeing after lunch.
Oh, let him play, nurse. Boys will be boys, and my son is no exception.
Oh, very well, ma'am. 5 minutes, Tarjo. Not a second longer.
Where are we sightseeing today, Mama?
Not another gallery or museum. My feet blister at the thought of it.
Now then, wherever your mother chooses, you must politely obey.
So where do you choose, Mama?
Will there be more statues of naked men?
Today, I think, St. Mark's Square.
Oh, can I feed the pigeons? Can I feed the pigeons?
You may not.
But they're world famous. It's a custom.
Oh, it's unhygienic. Dirty Italian birds squawking all over us.
You never get to do anything.
Exactly. You two, like myself, are Polish nobility. To do anything at all would be vulgar.
And what about Tajo?
Yes. Why isn't he forced to be drab? Why is he free to run in the waves and roll in the sand like a wild dog?
Because he is different. Because he's special.
Because he is a boy.
Where's the bell?
May I at least have a strawberry?
Certainly not.
Where's the flower?
We don't know where they've been. See that French governess over there?
Mm-hmm.
Her with the Swiss group. She told me that she heard some Russians telling an American that an Austrian ended up in hospital after eating fruit. He very nearly died.
Venite guardare queste Susani belle, dolci come il miele.
June 3rd, 1911. Dear Astrid, I know it's been a long time since I last wrote to you, but you must understand, as I do now, that my inability to write anything meaningful has been absolute. Somehow, since your mother died, my mind has been as closed as my existence, which had shrunk to the dimensions of my apartment in Munich. But today, Astrid, under the influence of the beautiful South, I'm a changed man.
Senta che buona, signor.
I must cut an alien figure sitting here dressed in black with desk and chair for all the world as though I'm in my study at home, when in reality perched under a sunshade on Venice Beach amid fruit vendors and castles in the sand. It's not only the temperature of the sun that melts my coldness, Astrid, nor simply the sticky air. They are merely symptoms of change. The root cause of my cold fire turning hot is Serenissima, queen of the Adriatic Sea. The sea. The sea. The youth is in the sea. Been watching him for hours. On my western horizon, a mere 30 meters distant, his angelic silhouette. And just now another boy, an older, hairier lad, he put his arm round my semi-naked youth and he in friendship only, but he still, he kissed.
Tajou, time to come in now.
What's this his nurse calls my warm, wet hero?
Tajou!
Oh, damn her Polish tongue, last my weak ears.
Tajou!
Adieu! That's French, means goodbye forever. Who'd name their son?
Tajou!
Oh, Tajou! Well chosen. Despite this chorus of wailing women, your mother called you well. And now I own your name. I'll write you a dedication. In this act, the pen's mightier than the salute or the kiss, especially when wielded by a master swordsman.
Ah, Tajou, at last. I sent the girls inside already. Now, take this towel, young man, and rub yourself all over.
He's doing it again.
Who is?
The odd man. Whenever I go past, he stares at me.
Oh, yes, him. He's a writer.
Really? What does he write?
Oh, great thick books without pictures, they say.
What is he called? I wonder if I've heard of him.
Oh, something distinguished. Something von something.
Von, you say? A German nobleman. How fascinating.
Hello? Well, tell him it's wrong to stare. He's gazing right at my thighs.
Probably lost in thought. Oh, don't look now, but he's starting to write.
Oh, frail Olympian. This Adriatic light sets you on a plinth of gold sand at which I worship. If we could lose the bolts and screws of bourgeois civilization, I'd weave a fable of your hair. No, 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 no! Too oblique.
I must not cloak my ecstasy. Be honest, Gustav, direct. Eternal youth, your skin is red where rubbed. Pray heed an older, wiser man when he tells you the pain of sand is also the pain of arousal as puckered wounds of a million crystal arrow shafts rip and chafe your perfect Christ! Come back with Saint Sebastian. For God's sake, stop being so damned holy. Live, love! At last, crawl out of your head and into your flesh and give voice to your forbidden desire. I want you, need you.
Look at him working. So damaged. So feverish. Oh! Smell that. Carried on the air. I fear the Sirocco's coming.
Sirocco? Sounds romantic.
Oh, anything but. It's an unhealthy wind, ma'am, blowing up from the dark continents of the south, trapping the city in a fog of its own wastes and stench. Soon everyone will be coated in slime and worse. We're best off out of it.
Does that mean keeping indoors?
It does.
But I wanted to feed the pigeons in St. Mark's Square. I never get what I want.
Nurse. That writer is still looking at us. I really find him quite intriguing. Perhaps after lunch I could find out more about him. Even read his books.
Oh.
After all, he's taken such an unusual interest in my family. I'm already half convinced he takes an equal interest in me.
Is this strictly a literary quest, ma'am? Or a matter of the heart.
What do you think?
I reckon the Sirocco's rising. When it blows, folks say anything can happen. And usually does.
Hate writing. Hate my writing. Each page. Line. Word, letter, comma, colon. God, I even hate my own punctuation. He's an innocent little boy. And I'm a sick old man. In Munich, I wrote pure drivel. In Venice, I write pure evil. I fled south to purge such nightmares, not sink even deeper. There! Confetti of paper sin. I fling you to the Sirocco. What am I doing here? Alone on a stinking beach. My heart pounds hell for leather. My mind unravels in the heat. Sirocco must be polluting me. I must leave this place. Plead ill health. Use the excuse of this humid, torrid wind blowing up today. Yes, all the sweat of the flesh of the sewers. They possess me and poison the air. Smell it. Taste it. An undertaste, rank and foul like shit wrapped in fish and bad meat. I must tear myself away. Quit this swamp of filth before it drowns me in its sweet, sweet sickness.
And whose is this trunk?
Aschenbach.
Room 19.
But he hasn't signed out. Still has his key.
He's in the dining room.
Miserable swine. Never tipped us a thing. The miserly
excuse
German.
Excuse me. But if a guest is in the dining room, why are you wheeling his trunk out the door?
What can I say? He won't be hurried.
So he's sending us on.
To the railway station.
Ahead of him.
His train leaves
in 40 minutes.
He'll never make it.
But he won't be hurried.
And why is he leaving when he's only just arrived?
The Sirocco.
Then he knows.
He'd be an idiot not to smell it.
Very well. Push off, disappear. The sooner he's gone, the better.
Auntie!
Helena?
Auntie, quick! Look what's floating past us in the canal!
Oh!
Yeah! The propeller's making it go flying! Caca everywhere.
Eleanor, come away from there.
No.
It's disgusting. You could catch typhoid.
Cigarette?
Thank you, no.
That child needs a good thump, eh?
Don't recognize me, do you?
Sorry?
The paddle steamer Trieste to Venice.
Forgive me, I don't.
That's probably because I'm no longer attached to my wife.
Ah, yes, yes. How was your honeymoon?
Rocky.
Ah.
What is it about this place? Dressed up like a wedding cake, but underneath it's all...
decay.
We had a row, you see. My wife thinks I only married her for her money. And now I begin to wonder if she's right. Odd how Venice stinks worse when you're on your own.
Tell me, where are you from?
Essen.
Essen. I did wonder about your accent.
Why, do you ask?
I bet the root of your marital problems is architecture and morality. If you take my advice, you'll leave this place forthwith. Don't look back. And once, up there, north, me and you in our cities of granite and hard steel, I promise we'll refine our morality away from this obscene, decadent, sodomizing architecture. My friend, we are not the whore. Only her, Lady Venice, harbor of nothing but disease.
What if it's too late? And however far we run, we carry the damage inside us. And forever tainted.
He sounds like Dante's Inferno. But what if he's right? In my head, the crime's already done. Even to go as far as to act it out in flesh would be mere detail. Perhaps the deed's no more damnable than the thought. Besides, isn't that the function of a holiday? Suddenly, this old whore of a town, glowing red in the dusk, becomes almost attractive again. Do you speak German?
Si, signore.
Then do so. I want a one-way ticket to...
Baggage.
Pardon?
Your bags, luggage.
My trunk was sent on before me. Here, I was meant to meet it.
Scusi, signore. I checked the list.
These Italians.
Oh, sir, catastrophe.
Hmm?
Your trunk. By error, she sent to Lake Como.
Then retrieve it.
Oh, yes, yes. And we send it to Munich as...
Munich? You will send it to me? I never heard of such incompetence. You're a disgrace, sir. Your railway is shambles. How on earth your forebears managed the Renaissance is beyond me. The insult! I'll not be packed off to Munich with excuses. Here I shall remain until my trunk returns. Gustav von Aschenbach is going nowhere.
Police!
There now, someone, hail me a gondola. I return to the Hotel Excelsior.
Ah, true, Gustav. Sadly, we are each of us going nowhere, and without our baggage. In a lifetime's writing, I've discovered only one other universal law. No one gets out of here alive. Oh, dear. I fear there's a third. Don't drink the water. Or eat the fruit. Remember Nurse's warning about the Austrian tourist who nearly died? Well, it gets worse. By my reckoning, the child who played with Kaka is already dead, and her aunt is sure to follow. That makes two. Such is fate. I wish I could change it, but there it is. Now the clerk, now the deckhand. And then there were four. If this is the start of it all, where will it end? 8, 17, 54, 112, 581... 1,000. As Gustav once again turns his back on any possibility of escape, even he cannot know he is returning to a city on the eve of destruction.
Compliments of
the man. Are you sure it's raw?
Fresh off the bone.
Excellent. Dear Astrid,
As I have forever forsworn putting pen to paper, this letter is written in my hand, alone. Dear daughter, I could say, wish you were here, or remark on the weather, but inside my head I can be utterly honest and say I am glad of your absence. Relieved your darling mother never lived to see this day. For Astrid, I have fallen. The object of desire lies not a boat's length from my table. His face, the perfect mating of Phaedrus and Eros. At the Lido, I nearly touched him.
Signore, a little money for our humble group of players.
Come close. Why are they disinfecting Venice?
The police, the city, the Sirocco. A summer precaution to protect our valued guests.
Rot! I've seen the empty canals, the drawn blinds, the tolling bells, and writing on every wall saying don't drink the water.
A few cases only of some minor malady.
Then why do you yourself reek of carbolic?
Because I am very, very clean. Scusi, signore.
Dear Astrid, from these last remarks, I don't want you thinking I am afraid of this rumored illness. I fear nothing. I am beyond fear. My only fear is for Tasho. My only fear is that in fear of this rumored malady, his family will take fright, leave the city, and forever rob me of the boy I love. What?
Divine.
What? Tasho, smiling. He's only laughing at the funny song.
No! He smiles at me.
Enchanting. Bewitching, parting his lips and turn away. Quick, hide your eyes in shame. Oh, my love, this boy is the Medusa, the Gorgon, the Basilisk. I adore him. I worship. Hide your eyes in shame. In God's name, tear yourself away. Don't smile like that. Never smile like that. You have no right to smile at anyone like that. Water. Don't drink the water.
Get a doctor! Quickly! Quickly!
Arguments Against Humor by Gustav Aschenbach. Chapter 3, paragraph 1. Never trust laughter. It is a mask. Consider the Mona Lisa. Even the most famous smile in history is at best ambiguous. Merriment can hide hostility. Indeed, consider the iron masks in Salzburg Castle, instruments of torture which imprison the wearer behind spikes, hooks, and a welded smile. Is this not the final corruption of humor into agony? If a smile can humiliate, then laughter, being so closely wedded to weeping or shrieking, must never be trusted. But the worst thing of all about laughter is when it ends. A feeling so crushing, it is better that we have never laughed at all. For if we hadn't seen such riches, we could live with being poor. Such riches, Mr. von Aschenbach. Oh, such riches.
Oh. Our patient returns to the land of the living. Don't be alarmed, I'm the hotel doctor. Having made a thorough examination, Mr. Aschenbach, I conclude there is nothing wrong with you. A few days' rest won't put right. Now, drink this and you'll sleep. I'll call again in the morning.
There's no need to worry. He hasn't got it.
That's a relief.
See, we weighed up the chances.
Whether to risk a big tip for the big sleep.
So we tossed for it.
A big tip won.
What haven't I got? In my jacket, there's a wallet. In my wallet, there's more money than any of you could earn in a month. Now tell me, what haven't I got? Keep your money. But you must give your word not to breathe any of this to a living soul.
My lips are sealed.
It is the dry kind, sir. The very worst. The dreaded coma bacilli. Spread from the dank ponds and stagnant waters of the Ganges Delta. Carried north and west by merchant shipping. Naples, Palermo.
And now
Serenissima.
It is a matter of some irony that the southern breezes and trade winds, which once made our city so rich, now bring her to the edge of doom. In such circumstances, with our modern economy dependent on tourism, it is understandable, if unforgivable, that the authorities wish to keep everything hush-hush.
This sickness, what symptoms does one look for?
Headache, nausea, giddiness, a slight fever, perhaps.
And you've seen it. You can verify that real cases of it.
The first fatality I attended was a fishwife. Her blood turned thick as tar, rendering the corpse distorted, black. Total dehydration, turning the face to a grinning mask. It can only be a matter of hours before a complete quarantine blockades the city. Then no one gets out of here alive. The lucky ones feel virtually nothing and simply slide into a slow, soft coma.
Ultimus rictus, Domine Deus, qui per apostolum tuum Jacobum locutus es.
2425.
Ultimus rictus.
Portate fuori in morte!
The last rites are said and done, and there we have it. I wish we could avoid it, but there we are.
3573.
Ultimus rictus. The eyes of truth are always upon us.
4124.
Ultimus rictus. The angel of death walks the streets of Venice. But where will he call next?
4,998, 4,999, 5,000.
5,001. Mama, how kind you are. At last we get to feed the world-famous pigeons of St. Mark's Square.
Oh, hush now, I am buried in a book.
Another one. You're racing through them.
Yes. This one is called Dialogue with Eternity. Oh, listen to this. Greater minds than mine have postulated that the eyes are the windows of the soul. But since Ovid, we have recognized that the blind, too, have souls. Eyes are irrelevant. Noble reader, the true windows of the soul are dreams. Through them, we may witness the never-ending battle between psyche and animus, good and evil, and the realm of this titanic struggle within a single soul. We dream what we are, and we are what we dream.
See how gently he's eating out of my hand.
Run, children, run, quick, to your mother now.
Why, sir, what's...
Madam, please, allow a perfect stranger to warn you of something evil, which even now is being hidden from you. Venice is gripped by pestilence. Death stalks the streets. You must leave now, at once, for the name of the plague is cholera.
Sir, I thank you. This prompt action may well have saved all our lives, but... Mr. von Aschenbach, I feel bound to ask, why are you stroking my son's hair?
His golden curls.
You won't touch me!
Tarjo, forgive me! Come back! Tarjo! Tarjo! Tarjo!
Adieu! Adieu! Adieu!
Excuse me, little girl. You must help me. I'm looking for Astrid.
Father!
Husband, my only love. Oh, we thought you'd gone forever.
We were so lonely.
Marooned in this beautiful alpine scenery.
With only my toy piano for comfort.
I don't know what happened. I must have got lost. I just took a wrong turn.
We've got your song, my love.
I'll play it.
It's called Daddy Comes Home.
You won't catch me.
Tarjo, come back!
get it.
But he broke my...
Shut him! He turns his back on those he loved. Husband, go to hell!
We dream what we are, and we are what we dream. And with each successive scene of the dream, layer by layer of artifice falls away until what is revealed is our naked, primal self.
You can't catch me!
Gustav, wake up. Remember your conscience? I'm still here. This is madness, Gustav. Turn back. Look what you're becoming. Beard, horns, cloven hooves. Gustav, is this what you want? A descent into bestiality? Don't follow him, Gustav. This orgy of sex and death is the destruction of everything human. Gustav, don't touch him. He's just a little boy.
Stop, let me go. This is wrong. No, not this way. You weren't meant to.
Tarzo! Gustav, please listen to me, to your conscience. You may be eating Tarzo, but you are only killing me.
His conscience dead, his reason gone. What used to be Gustav awakes back in Venice and worships a new dark god. There's now no question of him warning the Polish family. For what remains is no longer a writer lost for words. What remains is too primal, too carnal to even think in language. All that's left is the beast. Though he may gasp and snort and clutch his throbbing heart, what used to be Gustav is free now. The stinking labyrinth of Venice has its own minotaur, its monster, its creature from the lagoon. He cares about nothing. Words like civilization or decency are henceforth unknown to him. He fears no plague. He is the plague. The metamorphosis from high culture to bestiality is done. All we can do now is let his tragedy unfold unto its ultimus rictus and pray for him.
Good morning, sir. Fresh up today, eh? I think the Sirocco has blown himself into nothingness. Miserere! May I say today you look as gray as the gray sky, Mr. Gustav. Oh, of course. Most common in persons of distinction. But don't you feel we should all have an outside to match the virile young man within? Yes, Mr. Gustav. What care we of the straitjacket of society which cruelly judges for us what is natural and what is otherwise?
Tous ces moments... L'enchantement est aujourd'hui pour nous il n'y a rien.
There, I return to you the useful color of eyebrow and hair. And now, some chalk for that parchment skin.
I remember all those moments lost in wonder that we'll never find again.
And here, rouge for the cheeks. Now, purse those lips, Mr. Gustav.
There's no more time for us. Nothing is there for us to share but yesterday.
Perfecto. Bella. And so, to crown your renewal, a pink carnation for Sir's lapel? And now you are beautiful.
Excellence, beware. Forces there are polluting this city beyond imagining.
I warned everyone.
I told you not to drink the water. I plead it with you. Stay out of the water. Keep off the beach. But no one listens. Because I'm only a sad old man, I don't count. What are we children? We poor little children. We live in a city of water that kills its own children. The grave of innocence. The death of you. Excellence, I beg you, keep off the beach. Oh, everything is broken.
Deck chair, sir. Here, your favorite spot. Fine view of the beach, no? Oh, sadly, you're the only one out. Everyone gone. Venice is deserting. Even the Polish family in room 12 are upstairs packing their bags. Except for the boy. He's in the sea, as usual.
Tasho? Your gray eyes return me to humanity. Though hundreds of meters distant, how is this? How do you haul me out of my lust? Make me feel blessed just by standing in the sea, fringed by the sun, and pointing at the sun, and looking at me.
We meet again, in a place without winter. You wear a pink carnation. I wear almost nothing but a halo of the golden southern sun. And you can't catch me. Never will. To chase, yes. To follow, yes. But never to touch. For I am more than a boy. I'm a summoner. Down on earth to point you toward a higher destiny.
It's true. At your command, I leave my body and drift south above you.
Realize, this is real and not a dream. If you follow, you will see. Beyond the sun and sea, beyond reality.
Summoner, you point and I obey. Now I am beyond the sun. And beyond the sun is a gondola.
I will show you new inspiration, Gustav. I will take you back to where it all began.
Ferryman, is it you? Are you the foreigner I once beheld on the steps of a Munich chapel?
Signore.
Why did you pull that strange face, that cross between grin and grimace?
My expression was merely surprise. I had not expected to see you in Munich when I knew we were fated to meet right here in Venice.
Then my whole journey, the escape from the north, the quest for warmth, my writer's block and feverish pursuit of Tasho, all these were just elaborate ritual preparations for my own exit. Amazing! Never felt so alive, so young. Could I possibly stay here watching Tasho for just a minute longer? There's so much to learn, to write. Yes, I am reborn, bursting with words. I think I could write now. Yes, I could. Write forever.
I will bring you something to believe in, Gustav. I will row you across the swamp to the promised land.
Anna. It's beautiful.
Mr. von Aschenbach, I saw you from the lobby. No, don't get up or turn around. Carry on enjoying the view and watching Tadjo play, as I know you like to do. But if we spoke face to face, I doubt I'd have the courage to. Oh, Mr. von Aschenbach, with the help of a German dictionary, I have read all your books in a week. So, would you allow a perfect stranger to compliment you on your lifetime's achievement? I can see why your fame is official, why young boys are taught to read you at school. Such range. What depths. Your joy of denial and dignity of purpose mark you out as indeed nothing less than Europe's moral guardian. Mr. von Aschenbach, you are a genius. This is irrefutable, irreversible, but of all your noble works, my eye was drawn again and again to a half-forgotten passage of a half-forgotten essay called Ruminations Upon Perfection, written, if you remember, in your Alpine retreat just after your wife. It so chimes with the truth of my own bereavement. Each time I read it, I feel as if you were taking me by the hand. You can hear how I am moved, sir. So, if I may I read you page 15, paragraph 2, lines 1 to 7?
Oh, my God!
No!
Is that
no,
I
no.
Got it!
But we've so much
to understand her. Help me lift him.
Can't you stop staring and fetch a doctor?
No, he's not yours. I'm not yours. Not yours.
The end. The end, when it comes, is all too soon. Gustav couldn't know that Venice would rise again, reinvent itself and reopen within 3 weeks of the last grinning corpse of cholera. Then again, knowing the future, perhaps Gustav was lucky to expire when he did. He never knew old age, the long, slow slide to midnight. Nor did he witness a terrible war, the defeat and dismemberment of our beloved Germany, the desecration of everything noble about Europe, the rise to power of a new god, more evil than ever Gustav could imagine. Who knows how he'd have reacted? Would he, like me, have fled his nation to become literature's greatest chronicler of the abyss? There are some things that cannot be known. But I do know that cholera didn't kill Gustav, nor a failing heart, nor overwork, nor indeed a tragic lust for Taggio. Neither was it Serenissima, O ever-sinking city. It was me. I killed him because I thought it right at the time. Because, yes, I too was driven by a cold, cold fire. Driven to show the world that its only redemption lies neither in rules, which bring repression, nor the lack of them, which brings chaos. No, our only redemption lies in finding our unadorned, genuine heart. The world must re-find its heart. When I look at the world today, I fear my message went unheeded. We are what we write. We write what we are. Despite my rise and my rise, money, fame, status, and my Nobel Prize, the day I killed Gustav, I killed something of myself. If there was any death in Venice, it was mine.
Von Aschenbach, G., 1861 to 1911. Ruminations upon Perfection. Page 15, paragraph 2, lines 1 to 7. The future is expressed in the future tense, as in, he will be. The present is expressed in the present tense, as in, he is. But the past is expressed in the perfect tense. Therefore, only the past is perfect. The past is perfect. And he was. He was perfect. And I loved him with all my broken heart.
Ha ha ha.
Serenissima. So be it.
Death in Venice by Thomas Mann was dramatized for radio by Peter Wolfe. Gustav von Aschenbach was played by Clive Francis, Anya by Penny Darney, and the voice of the writer by John Rowe. Targio was played by Peter England, the nurse by Tessa Worsley, the decadent by Stephen Critchlow, Irina by Eve Karpf, and Astrid by Alison Pettit. Other parts were played by members of the cast, with David Bannerman, Gerald McDermott, and Anthony Ofwebu. The music was specially composed by Jason Wingate. Death in Venice was directed by Cherry Cookson.